Sairam listeners, and welcome to this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. I begin by offering my most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and it would be most appropriate to say the person who delivers answers to questions posted by you listeners. Yes, the answers are always Swami's, spoken by Swami on different occasions when he gave discourses, written by Swami in the many Vahinis, or most lovingly explained by Swami to devotees and students at different times. I thank you all for joining me week after week, sending me questions, and of course being so effusive in praise and constructive when it comes to criticism. This also happens to be the last episode of this year. Yes, by the time I meet you next time, we will be in 2017. So wouldn't it be appropriate to start with something about the new year and end with something that would be a means of welcoming the new year? That's precisely what we will do. I have received only one question for this week, and so that will be the only one I will be answering in a fair bit of detail, should I say. Anyways, we always begin with a quote, and that quote is going to be a beautiful thought with which we can begin a new year. The quote is from a best-selling author by name Sarah Bourne Brannock. And the quote for this week is, I quote, "Take a leap of faith and begin this wondrous new year by believing. Believe in yourself and believe that there is a loving source, a sower of dreams just waiting to be asked to help you make your dreams come true." End of quote. There's nothing much to explain about that beautiful quote. It's a simple and wonderful quote. The key words in that quote, according to me, are faith, believe. Could I add even leap? Why do we always say leap of faith, not a step of faith, not an amble, stride or skip of faith? It's always a leap of faith. Because we take a leap only when we are absolutely sure that we are safe. Either when we have a parachute on our back, or we are leaping into water when we are sure absolutely nothing can happen to us. And in life, we can take such a leap of faith only when we believe that there is a loving source. Not just any source, not just an all-powerful source, but a loving source. There's a gulf of difference between having belief in the existence of God and having belief in the existence of a loving God. And I think that is where we all are so lucky. We know that there is Swami, that God exists. We have seen Him, we experience Him even today. But we also know that He is a loving God. As Sarah Bourne Brannock says, one who is waiting to be asked to help. And as I had spoken of in one of the previous episodes, God is a witness. But when we turn to Him, seek Him, seek His love and His interference in our affairs, He becomes more than just a witness. He becomes the sower of dreams and also the one who helps us make those dreams come true. And how do we draw Swami to play that role in our lives? It is through faith. Let us believe that He is the only true companion, the only friend who wishes to see us succeed, the dear one who rejoices at our every milestone and whose heart rushes to help us when we are in need. Some people say that, but God is beyond feelings. He is Bhavatita. Dear listeners, the same God came in our midst, laughed with us, even shed tears seeing our pain and love. Maybe believing that He emotes with us is a good illusion to have, an illusion that can remove our other delusions. But I will leave it there for you to think about. Let me not dwell more into that thought, for we need to get on with the program. So before moving on, let me read that quote of Sarah Bourne Brannock one more time. I quote, "Take a leap of faith and begin this wondrous new year by believing. Believe in yourself and believe that there is a loving source, a sower of dreams, just waiting to be asked to help you make your dreams come true." Get to the question of the week then. The question is from a listener who had sent us a question earlier too. It is Sister Dr. Vaishali Dinkar from Pune. It's a pretty short question, so I'll be reading it out myself, and this is her question. I am sure you will agree that circumstances in life are not always in our favor. There are many times where we are so helpless, and during such times, I try to concentrate on praying to Swami. But still this question often troubles me. Kindly resolve this question for me. Thanks in advance. We humans have limited mind. Even then, we try to understand the supermind or God. Is it our foolishness or what? Or should one try to understand his ways and leelas, or just remain ignorant? That's an interesting question. So should we try to understand Swami and his ways, or just accept it as it is? And I think from the question itself, I can see that Sister Vaishali is leaning more towards acceptance than trying to understand. Is it wrong to try to understand Swami's ways? If so, can we really stop trying to understand just like that when we make up our mind? Before I go into all that, let us start with what Swami says about trying to understand Swami. Well, this is from a conversation that was narrated by Professor Nanjundaya, the first controller of examinations of Swami's university. When this happened, he was just a regular lecturer in Swami's college in Vrindavan. It was the year 1974, and Swami had taken him and a few other teachers of the college to Shivam, which is Swami's mandir in Hyderabad. So they traveled with Swami in the flight and were part of Swami's entourage. In the plane, they saw how VIPs and ministers were so desperate to have even one word with Swami and take a Pad Namaskar and vying for Swami's attention. Same scene, I guess, must have repeated at the airport and later in Shivam Mandir too. But once in Shivam, Swami called Nanjundaya sir and others and told them, "Come, I will show you around the Shivam Mandir." And Swami started giving them a tour to the entire mandir. He said, "This is the bedroom, this is the dining hall, and etc., etc." And Nanjundaya sir was really wonderstruck by what was happening. He was thinking to himself, "We are, after all, ordinary paid lecturers of his college. Maybe the least important in the scheme of things for Swami. Ministers and businessmen who are so important in the worldly sense are being given hardly any attention by him. And here Swami is taking us around and treating us like we are so important." Now that's how we tend to think, right? Swami has a huge organization, so much work to get done. He should be using his time more wisely, invested when where there can be more monetary returns or influence can be got in return, and so on. So Professor Nanjundaya was filled with all these thoughts and was looking at Swami with a very puzzled look. Swami noticed him and asked, "Hey Nanjundaya, what happened? Why are you looking at me like that?" And sir, continuing to look at Swami, said, "Swami, Swamini etla artham cheskovalano telledu. Swami, I don't know how to understand Swami." And Swami, who knew all that was going on in his mind, replied, "Nanjundaya, nannu artham cheskone daniki prayatnam cheyavaddu. Anubhavinchu, anandinchu. Don't try to understand me. Experience me and be blissful." So clearly Swami does not wish that we completely understand him. Just experience him. And when we say experience, I could probably elaborate that as be a witness and accept Swami and his ways without reasoning endlessly. Then why do we try to understand Swami's ways? Why do people like me sit and explain Swami's message endlessly? In fact, especially on this show, I don't just say that Swami says this is what we must do. I try and explain why we must do that, right? Or why Swami says so. If we all are only supposed to accept and not think, why these endless explanations at all? The fact is, reasoning cannot be stopped abruptly. As long as the mind is there, the mind will reason. That's the role of the mind. And that process of reasoning is what differentiates us from animals. But through this reasoning and attempts to understand itself, we can put an end to this understanding, especially when it comes to Swami and his ways. But first, let us try to see why we constantly try to understand things, events and situations. Why does the mind keep trying this all the time? This may not be comprehensive, but just what we need to know in this context probably. One reason is, there is an inherent subtle belief in us that if we know it, we have it. Knowing gives us a feeling of possession, a feeling of being in control. You can see this in many aspects of life. If you listen to a song, we want to know the lyrics or about how that song was composed. I know some people who may be good singers, who may not be good singers, but if they listen to, say, a Tyagaraja Kriti, they will try to explore the meaning, the story behind it, and that way, they have the feeling of making that Kriti or that song their own. Some people, the moment they eat an interesting dish, they want to know the recipe. So generally, knowing is a means of possessing. And that is something the mind always tries to do, and it does this more if by nature we are given to more thinking and understanding. Well, even in our schools and colleges we would see this, right? Some of our students, a superficial understanding is good enough. But for some students, they need a very deep understanding. If they don't get that, they will be very dissatisfied and restless. So even when we say we have a need to understand, the extent varies from person to person. But underlying this is, we are all trying to grasp whatever we come across in life with some kind of reason or understanding. For some of us, it is thorough scientific reasoning. Maybe for some of us, it is not. Some are happy to understand the whole thing through, say, planetary positions, say. You may ask, how can scientific understanding be equated to astrology or other such beliefs? Well, hopefully, you will understand why there is a subtle similarity in a short while as I proceed with the answer. But the point for now is, yes, the mind always tries to reason, understand, or grasp whatever it comes across, and this is a very, very natural process. It always tries to connect dots and build a cohesive narrative. And the mind feels, if it understands, it has it. In fact, this is the basis of the Jnana Marga, or the path of wisdom. That's why we have this phrase in the Vedas, right? Brahmavid Brahmaiva Bhavati. In the process of knowing Brahman, the knower eventually becomes Brahman. And that's also why it is called the path of knowledge. Trying to know and understand leads you to the ultimate. But the interesting thing is, the Vedas also claim, Yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasasaha. God or the ultimate exists in a realm where the mind and words fail to reach. So you are told to strive in understanding, but you are also told you can never understand completely with your mind. It can only mean the understanding happens, and the understanding through the mind is only one of the many ways possible. But the ancient spiritual masters teach us a way of reconciling between the two. Try and understand, but whatever understanding you arrive at, don't accept it as absolute. Declare, no, this is not it. Neti, neti it is called. In this process, actually does not allow you to understand through the mind, but it actually slowly sublimates your mind in the process of trying to know. It is like you are looking at the sun through, say, a prism made of ice. The more you turn this ice prism to the sun and keep seeing the sun through it, slowly the sun's rays melts the ice prism itself. And eventually we see the sun directly. So yes, though we can never understand God completely through the mind, the process will eventually sublimate the mind and we will see directly. But there are conditions for that, and if I can summarize the whole condition, all of the conditions in one word, the word would have to be purity. This process which I mentioned of the knowledge leading to the ultimate will happen only when there is absolutely no selfishness, no dishonesty, and you are absolutely sincere in the effort to know. This is what the Upanishads apparently say, that to be good is absolutely mandatory for this path of knowledge. And at every stage, your actions should be consistent with your beliefs. And this is actually a very important point that we generally miss out. Knowing is not knowing if it does not become a conviction and turn to the choices we make in life. Remember this point, we'll come back to it because it's a very, very critical point, Neville, I mean, for sure. Now I'd like to go back to that point which I made, which might have been a little unacceptable for a few. That is, there is a subtle similarity between understanding through scientific knowledge and through other sciences like astrology, palmistry and so on. See, in any form of understanding, we use multiple tools. We think when we understand scientifically, it is purely sound reasoning. But astrology and such things are like belief systems. But the truth is, whether it is science or any other belief system, there is reasoning as well as faith or unquestioning acceptance. Let me try to give you an example. Now I'm speaking through a microphone. Let's say you ask me, how does a microphone work? I will tell you, when I speak, the sound waves are created. These waves hit the diaphragm inside the mic, and the vibration of the diaphragm is converted to electrical signals. This electrical signal is then streamed through the internet, and it causes similar electrical signals in your computer or phone. And that signal again goes to your speaker or earphone, and there the electrical signal is again converted to acoustic signal or sound waves. That's how you hear my voice. Now that's a scientific explanation, right? Where did I get this explanation from? Got it from the internet. Have I actually seen with my own eyes the working of this whole process? No. Have I experimentally derived at the understanding? No. But I believe that some scientist bloke has done it and I can trust him and his words. So isn't it really belief in someone else's knowledge? Yes, the only difference with scientific knowledge is if I choose to know for myself, all experiments are available and I can do it. But still, at this point, my knowing is to a fair extent based on faith. So our knowledge of anything is actually a mix of direct experience, some sort of extrapolation, and also a fair amount of faith in someone else's words. This is explained in the Vedas by the concept of the pramanas. The word pramana means tools to know or ways of knowing. There are different types of pramanas, of which we can say three are basic or fundamental. One is pratyaksha pramana, which is direct knowing. I have tested it out for myself. I have seen with my own eyes. I have heard it myself. We generally believe that science follows only this, right? But it is not so. The next is called anumana pramana, which is by means of inference. A large part of science is actually inference. A most lame example that I can think of is, I know for a person to live that the heart must beat, right? And I see a person, but I can't see his or her heart. But if that person is alive, the heart must be beating. So you ask me, is this person's heart beating? I will say yes. And I am saying that through inference and not through direct seeing or feeling. This is referred to as anumana pramana, and it has so many subsidiaries like understanding through analogies, through multiple levels of derivation and so on. All this we see in our scientific learning also, and you will agree with me. And the last pramana is shabda pramana, which is understanding or accepting an explanation based on the words of a trustworthy person. Like we trusting the words of a scientist. Or when it comes to spirituality, we trusting the words of a guru or a spiritual master. Now the two things we have come to understand so far are, one, the mind constantly tries to understand what it experiences and observes. And the second thing is, this understanding is always a mix of direct perception, inference from past experience or derivations, and lastly, through the words of those we trust or have faith. Now we will try to apply this to devotion in Swami, or when we are in trouble and we pray to Swami, in that context. Well, at this point, let me tell you about one more reason why understanding is very important and the mind constantly tries to understand. And I will reveal that through a small example. let's say I'm not feeling well today. I have some pain in some part of the body and I go to a doctor. He diagnoses me with some problem and prescribes some medicine for me. I take the medicine, but the very next day, say I get high fever. Now I start worrying and I call up the doctor and I tell him that I'm having this very high fever. The doctor tells me, oh, is it? Good, good. That means the medicine is working. So your fever is actually a sign that you're recovering from the problem. The moment the doctor says this, I immediately feel so relaxed. Oh, there is a reason for the fever and it is attached to a bigger purpose. Then I don't have to worry. So the moment the mind understands this, it is prepared to undergo the discomfort, isn't it? This is one more reason the mind keeps trying to understand. In general, we try to avoid pain in life. But the only time we don't mind pain is if there is a purpose for that pain and the mind can understand it. That's why when we undergo trauma in life, even before wondering how to get out of it, we ask, why? Why, Swami? I did not harm anyone. Why are you giving me the pain? I followed your words. Why am I having problems? I did seva all the time. Why am I going through this trouble? Which means, nothing can give solace more than understanding the larger purpose. So this explains why, when in a problem, whether we believe in Swami or not, we will always want to understand why we are undergoing the problem. Now the three pramanas I spoke of, how do we relate them in this situation? I am in pain, I am praying to Swami. As I said, you cannot stop the mind from thinking. That's its job. Till it's sublimated completely, it will continue to think. Swami tells us we must believe that whatever happens, happens for good. So as we see ourselves as devotees, we say, whatever Swami does is in my life is good for me, right? I will try to explain why we keep trying to understand Swami through this one statement and how we can use the same process of neti neti here too. Now we are going through life. Sometimes we have happy tidings, sometimes we undergo pain. Now the mind is trying to make sense of what we are going through in life. As we saw, it is trying to connect the dots and draw a picture of understanding. The words of Swami that whatever happens is good for you becomes one of the many Shabda Pramanas. We believe in experts, scientists, intellectuals, so many masters. Like that, we believe in Swami's words also. That way, let's say we have belief in the statement of Swami, whatever happens is good for you. Now, what we do is, we are constantly trying to find in what way is what I am going through good for me. And we don't think like this when things are going well in life. We get this question only when we are in trouble. So we wonder, in what way is this good for me? For this, again we use the tools Pratyaksha, Anumana and Shabda Pramana. Either I should be able to perceive in what way it will help me, or I should be able to infer, or I should be able to get some convincing explanation through some talk or someone's explanation or the answering booth, right? Sometimes we are able to understand in what way what we are going through is good for us. Then the mind will be calm, as I explained. But when the mind is not able to understand it through any of these processes, it will be very, very disturbed. We will wonder, why Swami, why you are making me suffer? Why am I going through this pain? It is actually a battle within the mind. It wants to accept Swami's words, but it wants to see the proof as well. But this is where devotion is different. Believing in Swami's words is what is called faith. And faith is believing even when you cannot see. What we look around may suggest something else. What we hear from others may suggest something else. But we still choose to believe in Swami's words. The mind may ask, in what way can what you are going through be good for you? Your counter thinking should be, I don't know. All I know is, whatever Swami gives me is good for me. I don't know how it is good, but because Swami has said so, it is good. So essentially, the thinking or the trying to understand Swami does not really stop, but the understanding should be more and more biased towards this one Shabda Pramana or the words of Swami. That's why Swami would say, test me as much as you want, but after that, accept me wholeheartedly. Don't keep testing me after that. Don't test me essentially means, don't judge Swami's love or ways based on what you experience or hear from others. Rather, what you experience thereafter should be defined by Swami's words. The problem with all of us is, the faith is not perfect. In other words, when we go through an experience in life, we judge the situation through all these pramanas, and our belief in Swami is just one of the many ways in which we understand any given situation. In fact, though I am saying Swami's words are the Shabda Pramana, we should gradually raise it beyond all these pramanas. This is what Swami expects of us when we have faith in Swami. We make Swami's words, Swami's love for us, Swami's concern for us, Swami's justice absolute. We raise it beyond the reasoning and now fashion our reasoning based on Swami's words. And in my opinion, this shift of taking a belief in Swami and His words from being one of the pramanas to beyond the pramanas is one definition of surrender. In fact, Swami always belongs there. That's why God has been given the name Aprameya, one who is beyond the pramanas. He belongs there, but we have to acknowledge Swami's place there. And till we do this, our thinking will be an obstruction in faith. It's not that after we do that, we will not think at all, but our thinking will be below this belief. Now I told you I will explain how the Neti Neti philosophy works here. In the case of devotion, when we say, I believe whatever Swami does in my life is good for me, the mind will try to figure out how it is good, right? And many times the mind will find a reason. At such times, we must be able to say, yes, this could be a reason, but really, I cannot say that this alone is the reason. If we negate the reason the mind comes up with, our understanding will not depend on that reason alone. This is a beautiful story I'm reminded of in this particular context. There was once a yogi in a village. Everyone in the village respected him, and if anyone would come to him and tell him about their problems, he would say, everything happens for good, everything happens for good. One day, an unwed girl in the village becomes pregnant. When they ask her who is responsible for it, she says, the yogi is responsible for it. The villagers become wild and storm into his hut and don't even ask him is it true or not. They simply beat him up and they drop the girl there in his hut and tell him, now you better take care of the girl. The yogi smiles and says, everything happens for good. Maybe God wants me to take care of this girl. But I don't know. But everything happens for good. So without complaining, he takes care of her throughout her pregnancy, and she also eventually gives birth to a child. Not once he tells her, you spoilt my name, why did you lie to the people, or anything like that. But after the child is born, the girl herself becomes very guilty and repentant and goes and falls at the feet of all the elders and says, actually, I lied to all of you. The father of my child is not the yogi. He is very innocent. The father is the fisherman who comes from the next village. So now all the elders come rushing to the yogi's hut. They all fall flat at his feet. And again he smiles and says, this also must be good for me. When they ask him how he did not feel any anger or pain at what had happened, he said, I don't know how the infamy is good for me, nor do I know how me being relieved of the bad name and being praised by all of you good for me. I only know whatever my Lord sends my way is good for me. I base all my peace and happiness only on that. So I neither feel depressed when things go wrong, nor do I feel elated when things are good. The state of that yogi is no different from what we call complete surrender. Now the question is, how do we reach there, right? It's so nice to talk about it. As I said, one is believing that Swami is taking care even when we cannot see it. Second, even when we see it, tell yourself, this may be a reason, but I don't know. It may be more than just this. This neti-neti approach is very important, I feel, because it is that which brings equanimity and makes our faith independent of any happenings, good or bad. And more than all this, unconditional love for Swami is one tool that can get us there. Right now, we all love Swami because Swami does what is good for me all the time. And we are using our mind constantly, as I said, to figure out in what way what Swami is doing is good for me. When our love for Swami becomes unconditional, we will say, I love Swami and whatever Swami gives, I am happy to accept. We don't say it must be good for me too. That way we don't give scope for the mind at all. So this is the whole process. I'm sure nothing I said today is new. It all boils down to the same things. Trust Swami, even when all other events in life point to something else. When we do this more and more, we raise Swami beyond reasoning. Till then, if the mind wants to think, let it think. But keep reiterating to yourself, I don't know how Swami is in control, but I know for sure He is in control. I will end with one final point, which is actually a reiteration of a point I made in the beginning and I promised to come back to. When I spoke of the Jnana Marga, I said, through knowing, we reach the ultimate state. Brahmavid Brahmaiva Bhavati, the knower of Brahman becomes Brahman. I said, true knowing is when we know something and all our actions, thoughts and choices are aligned to that knowing. Same is the case with devotion too. I say, I know Swami is God, but my true knowing is only equivalent to the extent to which my actions express that belief. Just saying Swami is God or thinking so is not the true knowing. I will conclude with this small incident. Once Swami had called the lecturers of the college for an interview. At that time, one of them asked Swami this question. Swami, you say that money, wealth and such things are illusion. For us, Swami is God and we believe whatever Swami says. So we believe that these words of Swami too must be true. But why is it that we still run after these things? We accept because Swami has told, so it must be true. But how come we still crave for them? And in reply, Swami explained, okay, now you know that fire burns. That knowledge is there in you. Now, even if I were to pull your hand and put it in the fire, you will wriggle out of it and run away, isn't it? But why? Because that understanding that fire will hurt you is so strong in your mind that it expresses in all your actions too. But when Swami says something, you do accept, but not completely. When you really accept Swami's words, you will have absolutely no interest in money and such things, even if given to you. Sadly, that is the truth. We only say that Swami is God, but we don't really mean it. Maybe this too will happen slowly. If we will learn only through pratyaksha pramana, that is, I have to see with my own eyes, only then I will believe, then it will take a long time, but it will happen eventually. But if we bring in unconditional love, this process will happen so much more faster. Because through unconditional love, you raise Swami beyond the pramanas, the reasoning and understanding of the mind. So should we try understanding Swami's ways? No. As you said, our minds are too small to comprehend God, who is the supermind. But to stop thinking and trying to understand is not readily possible. For that, slowly we must make our faith in Swami absolute. Make a conscious effort to negate all the explanation the mind comes up with. Say, this may be the reason why this is good for me, but I really don't know. Or when we have no reason to believe, hold on only to our faith in Swami. Say, I don't know how or why, but I know Swami is taking care. Unless and until we slowly raise Swami beyond reasoning, this trying to understand Swami's ways will never stop. And this can happen through selfless, unconditional love for Swami. And aligning, more important point, aligning our actions and choices to our faith. It's been a very, very lengthy answer. I know I actually used the question to explain a lot of things. I hope, Sister Vaishali, you don't mind that. You didn't mind that. The fact that I had only one question with me helped, as I could give it more time. But if anything in what I said was not clear, you can always write to me. I would be glad to clarify it on air or off air. So, dear listeners, this is the question. This was the question, and a pretty long answer for that question. As I said, that was the only question I received for this week. But before I conclude the program, I wish to read a small prayer. And this one, believe me, is very, very special, because it was penned by none other than Swami himself. This was a prayer that Swami wrote and gave to Professor Kasturi, telling him that he should begin his new year with it. And that's not why this prayer is special alone. Swami did not call Professor Kasturi and ask him to note it down as he spoke it. Nor did he write it in a paper and hand it to him. Because this happened in 1960 and Professor Kasturi was very much a resident of Prashanti and would go to Swami's presence multiple times each day. But Swami did something very, very sweet. Swami wrote the prayer and asked one of the devotees to go to Bukkapatnam, the nearby town, and posted to Kasturi's address and name. And on New Year Day, when Professor Kasturi was going through his mail, postal mails, I'm sure some of us youngsters can get confused with the word mails. When he was going through his postal mails, he found this letter sent to him by Swami, who was actually, in a sense, his neighbor. Swami wrote in that letter as postscript these words. Swami wrote, "My dear one, begin the new year with the above prayer. Endowed with long life and sound health, surrounded by children, grandchildren and friends, keep on imbibing joy through bhakti and jnana. I bless that your days be spent in the service of Sarveshwara, the Lord of all. Spend your life in abundant peace and happiness. Baba." What a delight it must have been for Professor Kasturi. In fact, he writes how he felt when he received this card from Swami in post. He writes in his book, "When the blessing was delivered by the postman along with other mails, the surprise, the thrill, the gratitude and the yearning to express it directly to him rendered me incapable of speech or movement." That feeling is quite understandable, isn't it? So let me read that prayer so that we can think of it. For surely this is a prayer appropriate for all of us to begin our new year with. This is the prayer. "I firmly believe there is none kinder than you to shower grace on me. Tell me, is this not the reason why I am at your lotus feet? I firmly believe you will respond quick when I do pray and plead. Tell me, is this not the reason why I am crying aloud for you? I firmly believe you are ever beside me to guide my steps aright. Tell me, is this not the reason why I am yours through day and night? I firmly believe you can never say no, whatever I ask from you. Tell me, is this not the reason why I long for a glance from you? What have you designed for me this time? Why this dire delay to offer boons? However long you make me wait and wail, I will not leave. I will be standing still until your loving eyes do turn to me." Dear listeners, I'll read that whole prayer again. It's so beautiful, I can't hold myself from reading it again. The prayers from the beginning is, "I firmly believe there is none kinder than you to shower grace on me. Tell me, is this not the reason why I am at your lotus feet? I firmly believe you will respond quick when I do pray and plead. Tell me, is this not the reason why I am crying aloud for you? I firmly believe you are ever beside me to guide my steps aright. Tell me, Is this not the reason why I am yours through day and night? I firmly believe you can never say no, whatever I ask from you. Tell me, is this not the reason why I long for a glance from you? What have you decided for me this time? Why this dire delay to offer boons? However long you make me wait and wail, I will not leave. I will be standing still until your loving eyes do turn to me. What more do I say, dear listeners? Happy New Year in advance to all of you. Let us enter this year with a leap of faith in His love, saying whatever comes to me in the course of this year, good, bad, pleasure, pain, success, failure, surprise, disappointment, all of it is your gift of love, and I accept it with all my heart. Thank you for joining me this week, dear listeners. If you have a question you would like me to answer on this show, then feel free to write to me. My mail ID is prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. I'm going to leave you with, again, one of my favorites. Well, New Year is a time when Swami's students from different parts of the world assemble at Swami's feet. This is a song specially composed, rendered and offered by them during one such event in one past New Year. I'm sure you all will find your hearts singing along with this song. I'm going to leave you with the song. I'll be back at 12:30 for the afternoon satsang. Thank you for joining me. I offer this humble effort at Swami's lotus feet.
भगवान, हम सब बच्चों की तरफ से जो आपकी याद दिल में बसाए हुए जीते हैं, उन सब की तरफ से आपके चरण कमलों पर हमारा कोटि कोटि प्रणाम। भगवान, आपसे हमारी पहली पहली बातें, वो आपके मीठे वचन और उनसे जुड़ी हमारी प्यारी प्यारी यादें, वो हमारे एहसास आपके लिए आपके साथ।
ये साई वचन हुए जीवन आधार, मिला संग साई का बना रिश्ता साकार। हम जीते हैं साई में, ऐसा है
मरेंगे साई के साथ। पहला है प्यार साई के साथ।
दिल की धड़कनों से कोई पूछे कि वो सांसों को बयां करे, दिल की धड़कनों से कोई पूछे कि वो सांसों को बयां करे, दिल है सांस है और उनके बीच एक अनकहा एहसास, ये एहसास है हमारा पहला प्यार साई के साथ। वो पहले प्यार की पहली कड़ी, आपका वो पहला सवाल कहां से आया। सदा से और सदा के लिए शुक्रिया, इस जन्म में फिर से मिलाया आपने एक नई पहचान के साथ, और वो आपका पूछना ये प्रेमी।
सिलसिला बातों का ये रिश्ता है जन्मों का,
वो सिलसिला बातों का ये रिश्ता है जन्मों का,
वो अटूट बंधन
के चयन एक अनोखा बंधन है हमारा उनसे, हर काम की शुरुआत और हमारी आखिरी मंजिल, वो हमारा बेसब्री से इंतजार कि आपका अपने चरणों की ओर इशारा करते हुए कहना जिसको इसको रहा?
पास आके कभी दूर से
पाद से वार, कभी चरण वंदन
वो पाद से वार, कभी चरण वंदन
हमने पाया योगियों का ध्यान
पहला है प्यार साईं के साथ,
पहला है प्यार साईं के साथ।
दिल ये गुनगुनाए आंखें मुस्कुराए, दीवाना हुआ दिल कैसे से समझाए, सांसों की लड़ी
to Radio Sai Global Harmony, bringing you the message of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Bhagwan often said that he had incarnated not to start a new religion, but to make a Hindu a better Hindu, a Christian a better Christian, and a Muslim a better Muslim. During the 85 years of his advent, Bhagwan Baba delivered thousands of divine discourses on a variety of spiritual topics for the benefit of entire humanity.
సర్వభూత హితం ఏవాం, మీరందరూ క్షేమంగా ఉండాలి.
Let everybody be happy, safe and secure.
ఆనందంగా ఉంటుండాలి.
Let everyone be happy.
ఇట్టి సర్వశక్తిమయమైనటువంటి యొక్క ఆత్మతత్వము ప్రతి మానవుని యందు కూడాను సుత్వ రూపంలో నిలిచి ఉంటున్నది.
దిస్ ఆల్ పవర్ఫుల్ ఆత్మ రిసైడ్స్ ఇన్ హ్యూమన్ బీ ఎవరీ హ్యూమన్ బీయింగ్.
సేవ అనేటువంటిది మొట్టమొదట అహంకారాన్ని చంపివేస్తుంది.
సర్వీస్ ఫస్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ కిల్స్ దిస్ ఈగో.
నీవెవరు అని ప్రశ్నించినప్పుడు నేను ఆత్మను అని చెప్పాలి.
ఇఫ్ ఎనీవన్ పుట్స్ దిస్ క్వశ్చన్ హూ ఆర్ యూ, యూ షుడ్ సే ఐ యామ్ ఆత్మ.
Dear listeners, Radio Sai delivers a daily dose of four divine discourses. On Radio Sai's Asia stream, the first divine discourse is at 6:30 a.m. in the morning and the second is at 11:30 a.m. Indian Standard Time. You can listen to the third divine discourse of the day at 2:30 p.m. in the afternoon and the fourth at 10:30 p.m. at night. These timings are on Asia stream. To know about the timings of the Divine Discourses of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page on our website, radiosai.org. You can also listen to these discourses at your leisure at any time by downloading them from our website, radiosai.org. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.